A bureaucratic morass at the FAA limits access to training in light sport aircraft. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the ANN special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. One of the most frustrating cases of bureaucratic constipation facing pilots in the U.S. has been the FAA's withdrawal, almost 3 years ago now, of guidance to district offices for issuing LODAs, or Letters of Deviation Authority, to allow training for compensation in experimental aircraft. The action made it more difficult to find transition training for some experimentals, but also resulted in a virtual ban on new training toward certificates in some types, and there didn't seem to be any particular problem or concern that had prompted the move. There were hints something might be resolved last summer, but when the guidelines came down, they allowed LODAs only in limited circumstances, with a vague path through the AFS 800 division for exceptions. At the time, Earl Lawrence was still at EAA as VP of Government and Industry Affairs, and I got to speak with him about the impasse.
Well, and I appreciate to have the opportunity to talk to all the listeners about this today.
Let's start out by talking about why LODAs are necessary, because, you know, obviously if you've always wanted to fly airplane single engine land, you can find instructors tripping over themselves to help you learn how to fly them and aircraft around at relatively cheap prices. Why would it ever be necessary to get an experimental online as a trainer?
Well, you know, I think that's a key question. What we found out years ago is that every aircraft is unique, especially within experimental world and in the lighter world. And I think it makes sense to everybody. You want make and model transition training. You need to learn in the aircraft that you're going to fly. And that's an important thing, to have an opportunity to fly in something that you're going to learn to fly. Years ago, the Experimental Aircraft Association received an exemption from the FAA that allowed our members to, you know, advertise and make available their RV6s, their 4s, you know, their experimental amateur built aircraft to other experimental aircraft owners to get some training in it. And this isn't about a money-making thing, really. This is just getting access because, you know, if I loan you my airplane, I need to add you onto my insurance policy. You got some fuel and oil there. That's all compensation that the FAA says you can't do with an experimental aircraft. But in the interest of safety, the FAA said, okay, well, we'll let you create this program and allow somebody to rent your aircraft so they can get that important training. And then when light sport came along and sport pilot came along, there were some rule changes. And the agency said, you know, this makes sense for safety's sake to put in a regulation to just allow the what we're calling a deviation from the regulation to use experimental aircraft for flight training purposes, because it's important that people learn to fly the airplanes that they're going to fly. You know, learning how to fly in a 172 is not the same as flying in your, you know, trike or whatever it may be. You need to learn in that trike, and you need availability of those aircraft. So they made this regulation, and you know, it's there now, and it's available. It's something that's there, and that's a good thing. Those are issued by your local FISDOs, but with any regulation, you need instructions on how to implement that regulation. And it's really those instructions that needed to be updated and provided that haven't been issued. And that's step one. The other thing that happened is when light sport came along, we took all our ultralight trainers and we registered them as EOSAs. And also in that regulation, we gave an opportunity for those aircraft on day one to be used specifically for flight training, if it was an ultralight trainer, to continue to be used for flight training for 5 years. And the hope by the agency was that at the end of the 5 years, there'll be enough specifically built, factory built new aircraft to take the place. Well, that worked well in some segments, but not in all segments. It didn't work well for the low and slow fixed wing aircraft. It didn't work real well with the powered parachute community. It didn't work real well with the gyroplane community. You can't even have an SLFA gyroplane. Mm-hmm. So we've got these groups of aircraft, and that's really what this deviation, it's 91319, was developed for these situations where there just are not a lot of, quote, certified or SLSA aircraft to get proper training in, because that's what you're going to go fly. And so we need these deviations. And unfortunately, the agency has been tied up in what I would call the worst case of, you know, the bureaucracy gone wild or gone wrong. You know, this is the worst of the worst case, where they haven't been able to get the policy and the information out to the FISDO so these important documents can be issued so flight training can continue as necessary.
All right. Now, this is, I have to observe, this is somewhat of a paradox for the FAA because, you know, most of what the FAA deals with is the world of certificated aircraft, obviously. And in that world, if you get into one Boeing 757, it's going to be, you know, just like any other Boeing 757 in terms of learning to fly it. But when you're talking about ELSAs, or especially experimental amateur built, if the argument is that people need to learn to fly what they're going to fly, there's potentially an equally valid argument on the other side that says no two of these things are the same. How do we reconcile that?
You know, that's a good question. No two are the same, but we can get close. And so one RV4 is about as close as you're going to get to another RV4. And, you know, one power chute is as close to another power chute as you're going to get. And it's just important to get as close as we can to the type of machine that somebody's going to fly and make that training available to them. And, you know, when you look in the fixed wing world, there's a good number of SLSAs that were issued, fixed wing SLSAs. But what there aren't a lot of is there's only four aircraft that are the under 80 knot aircraft, and you need a specific check to fly an under 80 knot airplane, okay? And there's four in the entire country that are SLSA. So the availability of those aircraft and that special training that you need to fly something in the lower, slower aircraft, you can't even go to a similar aircraft because there's only four in the whole country to go to.
More of my conversation with Earl Lawrence in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Freedom through performance. At Cirrus, performance is not simply the measurement of a single design parameter. Rather, it's a total package. It's optimum balance of speed, efficiency, comfort, safety, ease of flight, and quality. We call it Cirrus Flying 2.0. Aren't you ready to feel the freedom?
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Welcome back to the ANN Special Feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking with Earl Lawrence about the bureaucratic nightmare that the FAA has left pilots of certain kinds of aircraft with no legal or practical way to get training. Earl, you know, I never would have dreamed a few years ago when I got into aviation, you know, the extent to which politics and personal bias could affect the internal workings of the FAA. But in the case of rotorcraft, specifically gyroplanes, the FAA created a sport pilot certificate for rotorcraft gyroplane. And then apparently because there's just some folks in the rotorcraft directory that don't happen to like gyroplanes, you know, they dug in their heels and would not allow SLSA gyroplanes. So there's no route right now to get a new trainer online. And I guess with Randy Babbitt having in his recent talking points how the bureaucracy really actually functions pretty effectively at the FAA, I have to wonder if that's true for anyone who isn't big enough to have their congressional delegation on their speed dial.
Well, and you mentioned the congressional delegation on your speed dial, and in this case, I wouldn't encourage that, because what happens is the very people at the FAA who are working this issue have to stop working the issue and answer the congressional inquiries, and sometimes that can slow us down. But you have pointed out something, and, you know, if people feel a need to share their experience, and especially if they've got a personal experience they can share, to send a letter to the administrator, why not? The administrator should know that this is affecting real people and real lives. And you're right. I have to say that when I've heard the administrator now at Sound and Fun and here in Oshkosh talk about amateur-built safety and the need for transition training, it irritates me when I say, well, you know, it's the agency who hasn't taken the steps necessary to ensure that transition training is available to the owners of these experimental aircraft. You know, the agency is delaying this. We had a nice system when EAA ran it. You could find instructors, you could find the aircraft. And, you know, if that really truly is the critical item to make sure that people have training available to them, maybe with all good intentions, but the result is we have less training available, and that is not good for safety and can't be good for safety.
If I want to send a letter to the administrator, at this point, what is the best way to do that, and will it actually have a shot at getting read?
Well, it will definitely get read. There is absolutely no doubt about that. I think people you may be surprised to learn that every time you send a letter up to the agency, somebody is reading it, somebody is reviewing it, and it does affect folks. And when you say affect, that's why it's always important to, you know, be professional in a way. I mean, you certainly share your personal experience and be articulate in it, but this isn't about, this is an agency we're addressing. It's not an individual we're addressing. But there are individuals that work there, and, you know, if they can somehow connect to your feelings and understand that, geez, you know, for whatever reason, let's figure out how to break through this because we're affecting, you know, the understanding of affecting real lives and getting, you know, result and fixing this is really what's important. And that's one of the things we just had Air Venture, and it's so nice to have all these FAA folks come here because, you know, whether we get everything we're looking for or not, they have to look at everybody in the eye and explain what they're up to and what's going on, and they get to see for themselves the effect of their regulations, both, you know, positive and negative. And, you know, and writing the administrator is pretty straightforward. It's 800 Independence Avenue, Washington, D.C. And, you know, to the office of the administrator. And, you know, will the administrator read all these? Probably not. Will it get passed on to the offices dealing with this? Yes. And, you know, and it does show to them that people are anxious and help frame in their understanding just how many people they are affecting.
Well, I'm going to ask you a final question, and I hope this doesn't come as too big a surprise, but something has occurred to me, and that is, if you look at the causes of accidents, whether it's in certificated aircraft or in ultralights or in gyroplanes or whatever, it's almost never the equipment, especially in the training environment. We don't have trainers breaking in half. I mean, that's just not an issue with the ELSA or even EAB. Why are we focused so much on the hardware when it's hard to point to a problem?
That's exactly what we've been asking all along to also. And to be fair, there is some balance. I mean, when you're the agency, who do you answer to? You answer to Congress. You answer to the public of the United States. And from a public standpoint, people are want to know that when their son, their daughter, their husband, their, you know, wife or whatever goes and takes flight instruction, that there's an expectation that the FAA is overseeing not just the instruction, but the safety of those aircraft. And when things go wrong, they ask questions. And so there's they're looking to have that level of safety as high as socially acceptable, you know, and there's always that balance. And so, yeah, you can say, is it better, you know, in a general sense to have brand spanking new certified aircraft out there for flight instruction? Sure. Where deviations come into places, when there aren't brand spanking new wonderful
right.
aircraft.
Right.
And that's what we're talking about here. So certainly there's a desire, if there is availability of new aircraft and they're out there and they're available and they could be used, that's the preference. But in the cases where they're not, I mean, you mentioned them. I mean, there's no such thing as an SLSA rotorcraft. We have 4 fixed-wing aircraft that are the slower aircraft available. I'm very happy there's manufacturers trying to make those aircraft and fill those voids. And, you know, they're looking to have their, you know, they're saying, hey, wait a second, we build aircraft to specifically fill that niche and people need to buy them from us. And I agree, that's wonderful. But safety has to come first, and if they're not available, well, that's when you issue deviations, and that's why we have deviations.
Well, I won't pin you down on a timeline, but I do want to keep your number on speed dial, Earl, and maybe get back to you here in the next couple of months and see if we're making any progress, and we certainly appreciate your insight.
Thank you.
At the time of this conversation in August of 2010, Earl Lawrence was the Experimental Aircraft Association's Vice President for Government and Industry Affairs. We probably couldn't have a conversation this frank today, because in October, after 16 years with EAA, Earl left and now works for the FAA as the manager of the Small Airplane Directorate in Kansas City. Sources within EAA thought there might be another chance for resolution of this training impasse by the end of 2010. It didn't happen. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.